You want to take a minute before we go live?
No, I'm fine. Let's get this disaster over with. I really did not pick it. Oh, I'll save it for the show.
We're live. We're live.
Oh.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, listeners.
Knock, knock.
I didn't even look to see who's in. Oh, okay. It's Rye.
It's Rye.
Doug and TM.
Although we're not entirely sure if Doug is active or TM.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have your placeholders in here, your avatars, your totems, to mark your property, your land, to stake out the name.
The totems. So mm-hmm. we should spin Rye and see if he wobbles, and if he doesn't wobble, that means we're in a dream.
Oh, I was thinking of a different thing. But sure, we could spin him. I mean, he's not like a particularly large person, so...
He might be able to do like a head spin, like a breakdancing kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we could spin him Rye round, baby, Rye round. Cause...
that was so bad.
Yes.
Not as bad as tonight's movie, but it was pretty bad.
Oh, well, you know, I can only try so much on such short notice to be as terrible as a Jim Henson movie.
Good week, though.
Sure.
I feel like we need some build up into this. We can't just jump right into this movie.
Reminder, audience. This is week three, otherwise known as just a couple days after the other recording.
No. Remember, way back 2 weeks ago when I said I had my microphone set in the right setting after we met live? Totally didn't last time.
Yes. Additional follow up. Thank you all for writing in about Starship Troopers. I really appreciate it. Nobody said anything yet.
And nobody said anything. Yeah.
Well, except for Todd. I posted that link.
Yeah, the direct link to shaming me about Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. It's nice.
I put a lot of effort into that.
Mm-hmm.
When I told you I wanted to edit the show because I had some fun ideas.
Yeah, that was it. You just wanted to put some suspenseful music and then an engine stalling out behind me.
Yeah. Well, not just any engine, Dan. What kind of engine is that?
It was one of the, was it the X-Wing? I don't know.
Man.
Oh, no, that was, God, it was the Millennium Falcon. See, I'm in a haze today because I have smoke inhalation poisoning. If you go back to whichever episode that was last year, I smoked a piece of meat in my little backyard smoker, and I inhaled a lot of smoke today, so I'm not exactly on my A game.
I think my advice last year was not to do that.
Yeah, I know. I tried to avoid it, but
I thought you basically put meat inside of a smoker and then you just let it sit there, and then you go back inside of your house.
Well, you got to maintain the temperature, so you got to keep putting charcoal briquettes underneath there, and you got to keep putting extra pieces of wood in there to make sure that the smoke stays consistent. So, I think at one point I did it backwards. I put the wood in first and then the charcoal second, so the wood was smoking like right into my eyeballs. It stings a little bit.
No, never mind.
yeah, that's what she said. She said I have my eyeballs smell like hickory.
Okay.
It's good though. Like I haven't used the smoker since last Thanksgiving, and I think I was just sort of like trying to get a little bit more practice under my belt before next year.
Okay.
And so we bought a turkey last time we were at the grocery store, and I threw it on the smoker, and it was good. Did it for about 6.5 hours.
What size turkey?
It was a small one. It was only about 7.5 pounds. Did you know that the turkeys they sell not around Thanksgiving are different than the ones they sell during Thanksgiving? They are A, smaller, and B, this one didn't have like drumsticks, and it didn't have all the various accoutrements that they usually stuff inside. But it was a turkey, but it was very small and reduced in scope and size.
I'm confused. How did it not have drumsticks? Did you buy just like turkey breast?
It was a turkey, but there were no drumsticks. They were just like torn off of it.
That's very strange.
It was very strange indeed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fine. It was just a test. I got plenty of smoked turkey off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
You gotta smoke the meat.
Yeah. It was tasty. We bought some sort of, some stock sides. There's a nice little, sort of pre-made mashed potato thing. It's like a loaded baked potato, mashed potato. It's very tasty. I enjoy it.
Dan,
mm-hmm.
Why would you go through all the trouble to smoke a turkey and then you can't even make your own mashed potatoes?
Because the experiment was really about the smoker, not about the other things. And, there's limited time during the week. So we just wanted to get down to business and,
Have you looked at like a recipe for mashed potatoes before? Just out of curiosity.
It involves boiling mashed potatoes and mashing them. Yeah.
Well, they're not mashed until you mash them. You just boil the potatoes.
Mm-hmm. And see, but the alternate is you put a thing in a microwave.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's done and it's delicious.
Okay. That's really good, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of you, really.
Thank you. It was good. I didn't give us food poisoning that I'm aware of yet, and it was tasty.
Oh, you'd probably know by now. Last night I made a pizza, but I also took a shortcut because I bought the dough from Trader Joe's because I wasn't gonna make pizza dough because I don't have a standing mixer and I didn't feel like kneading it for like 3 hours. I was in a little bit of a rush, so.
See, if you had an Apple Watch, you would want to fill up those exercise rings. You would need your own dough.
Okay. But I don't. So it's fine.
That's what I'm saying. You should get an Apple Watch and it'll motivate you to make your own dough.
I don't know if that necessarily is better because you're still making pizza dough. So, you know, that. But it came out pretty good, all things considered.
Oh yeah, you put some pineapple and some pepperoni and what was it, some serrano peppers on it? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, it was bacon instead of pepperoni this time.
Mm.
So nice smoky bacon and little slices of serrano chilies. And I chopped up the bacon into little bits, fried it in a frying pan. I know, bacon method, screw off. And so did that. Took the bacon bits out of there with the bacon fat, put the pineapple chunks and the serrano slices into that, and cooked that there before putting it on top of the pizza. So it was a little cooked before it went on. So that way, because when you put a pizza into the oven, you're only putting it in for 10 minutes. And not a lot is going to happen to a giant chunk of pineapple in 10 minutes in the oven, even though it is quite warm. So it heats it up pretty good.
That's an interesting pro tip, that the in the oven is pretty warm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But not as warm as frying it in bacon fat.
that does actually sound delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a fan of the serranos as well.
Yeah. Well, I wanted the Fresnos because they're a little sweeter, but they didn't have them. So it was Hatch chilies or serranos or Pasilla chilies or ghost peppers, and I was like, I think I'll stick with the serranos. I mean, I like them more than jalapenos. I know they're basically just like slightly larger jalapenos, but slightly different flavor profile.
Yeah, I'm a fan of serranos and guacamole.
Like tableside guacamole.
Yeah, it's good. It's authentic. It comes in that big sort of like stone bowl thing that is really awkward to hold.
Yeah, and it's shaped like a pig.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah. Remember, you thought it was a dog?
It wasn't the greatest representation of a pig.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
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 To address the chat room on two accounts, I did indeed buy a 24-pack of waffles when I was at Safeway, just because, I was out and I needed some. Although, I got home and like an idiot, I forgot to check. I am now out of maple syrup, so that's a bummer. And the other account. Sorry, did you have to follow up on the waffles?
I was just going to talk about how you gave me so much crap about how you can't go to Safeway to buy waffles, and
you know,
you did.
I don't go out of my way just to get waffles at Safeway, but I was there to buy a turkey and some various other things.
So you killed 24 waffles with one stone.
No, I killed two waffles with a little bit of maple syrup.
Okay.
And then it was a little sad because I was running low towards the end there. And you got to have the appropriate syrup to waffle ratio, as we've discussed before.
Mm-hmm. And now, do you drown your waffles?
No, we don't drown. Okay. We just fill up all the holes.
Okay. Well, if you fill up all the holes, then isn't it drowned at that point?
It's pretty close.
Okay.
I think if you were to do some actual like surface tension or actual like to see if it would float in water still with full of syrup on the top, I think it would still float, so it's not drowning.
Okay.
By the definition of the word drowning, I mean
you just mean that it's not floating in syrup.
Correct. Or that it would indeed still float on top of water while carrying the load of syrup that I have added to it.
Yes, the load of syrup. Okay.
That is it's a very peculiar metric, but it's the one I'm going with right now.
Sure,
it's important to have metrics to measure your progress.
Yeah. Sweet, sweet progress.
And your syrup consumption.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you buy authentic maple syrup, or do you buy, like, reduced calorie
we're not gonna,
stuff?
We're not going to get into that.
Oh. Do you buy the pancake syrup, otherwise known as corn syrup, that is slightly flavored to be like maple syrup? Is that what you buy?
Sure.
Oh, Dan.
I buy fake waffles at the Safeway. What do you think I buy to put on it?
Fake syrup.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Well, I use only authentic maple syrup on top of my chia seed gluten-free waffles. So
that's disgusting. This is why you live in Los Angeles and I live in the suburbs of Phoenix.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway. Food talk.
You know what would be good, Dan?
Hmm.
If you had a waffle, but it had an uneven grid pattern inside, so that it was almost like a little maze, like a little labyrinth, and you could pour the syrup through the labyrinth to get to the center.
Well, if it was in fact a labyrinth, you could just pour into one section, like the entrance of the waffle, and it would trickle its way through the rest of the maze of grooves on the waffle. So you wouldn't have to. You wouldn't have to work as hard to make sure it gets evenly covered.
Oh, like those games where there was a little metal ball that would roll around and you'd tilt it?
Yeah, yeah. Until you get it all the way to the end and you get it in a little hole.
Tilt your waffle?
Yeah, a tilt-a-waffle. That's what it's called, I think, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Mm-hmm. That would be, that wouldn't be great because they would get a little, there's a little bit of flex in the waffle and you don't really want to be handling your waffle so much.
Why? It's a crispy, delicious waffle.
Yeah, because, I don't know. Just, like, don't touch your food. Use a fork.
But it's just a waffle. How do you... So you only use a fork to get it out of the toaster oven, or do you use your fingers for that? Oh! Important question. Do you use a toaster or a toaster oven?
I have never in my entire life owned a toaster oven.
Oh, my God.
Slot toaster for life.
How many slots? What's the waffle to toaster ratio?
It's just two. Nothing fancy here.
Okay, so you can only make two waffles at a time. What does Amanda eat?
We don't really eat at the same time.
Okay, so you can't even dine together because of the device that you've chosen.
the toaster is not the limiting
it's
factor
driving
to us dining
you apart.
Together. No, it's not. It's literally not.
Okay.
My AeroPress only makes one cup of coffee at a time, and yet we still manage to both drink coffee in the morning.
But she's not using your AeroPress.
She is. I make it for both of us.
Okay. So you make one cup and then another cup?
Yeah.
So why don't you make her waffles after you make the other waffles?
If she wanted waffles, that would in fact be what would happen.
Oh, but you don't do that because you don't respect her as a human being enough to make her waffles?
Oh my God. Generally speaking, she makes her own waffles while I'm making coffee.
Okay, fine.
Where did these wild accusations come from?
I don't know. I'm just very concerned. Ever since I found out
you're
a slot toaster
about
person.
Amanda's waffle consumption?
Yeah. I was just very, very concerned about you. I just discovered that you're a heathen. So, yeah.
In more than one way, yes. But my options are limited. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. Living in toaster sin. So.
I mean, it works. I would love... like an actual waffle maker, because I think that would be quite enjoyable.
Whoa, let's not get crazy.
Yeah, I know. I made that one at the hotel buffet in Canton, Ohio the other week, and ever since then, I've been gung-ho about making my own waffles. That one was kind of a travesty, because it was all pre-made batter, and who knows how long it had been sitting there, but it was still pretty good.
Oh, I've been to those hotel free breakfasts where... everyone gathers around the waffle iron and the like pump thing that
yeah.
Oh dear.
The first time I saw one of those was when I was moving from Phoenix to San Jose, and we stopped overnight in this fun little truck stop town called Button Willow, which I believe I've brought up before. It is literally like a Subway, a Starbucks, a couple gas stations, and a Knight's Inn. They put like a tarp over the old Days Inn sign or whatever it was, but. I think we were the only people staying in the hotel, and in the morning checking out, there's like, oh, you know, here's our little breakfast thing, and they had one of those little waffle pump maker things. It's just like, no, thank you.
I'm sure it was super fresh.
We're just gonna be on our way, if that's all right with you.
Yeah. No. I never partake of the waffle thing because like so many people are touching that with their grubby fingers that I don't want to also be using that device.
Yeah, although I think the part that actually makes the waffle is probably relatively sanitary, because it does get quite warm, and it would probably burn off anything that's in there. But yeah, just the rest of the apparatus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. I'm just talking about the handles and stuff, like the flippy thing. And like, I don't want to touch that stuff, because that's covered in people germs. Like, can you imagine all the little kids are like, "Mom, look, I made a waffle," and they're like sliding their awful diseased fingers all over everything?
First of all, I wouldn't want to let a kid do that, because I slightly overfilled mine a little bit, and as you clamp it down and flip it, it like squirts hot waffle batter out the side, and then that would just, you know, that would permanently scar a young child if it hit him in the face.
Okay.
Young children aren't always the most responsible or bright, is what I'm saying.
No, I understand that. I think you're underestimating the ambivalence of parents. So
I don't think I am.
Okay. Because most of the time I go to those whenever I'm at those hotel breakfasts, it's just like they just let the kids run amok, like flipping things over, grabbing things they're not going to eat, touching every single yogurt in the thing. I mean, there is no controlling children.
Yeah, although I think if it looks like they are about to touch a device that could make the parent's day more difficult, they're going to tell them to stop. Or, you know, if it's something they could break, or just something that they would have to deal with management, they're going to want to avoid that.
Yeah. But anyways, regardless of that,
I guess we've danced around it long enough. Should we talk about our movie?
Sure. Well, I mean, to segue us into that already.
Yeah, I was trying to do that too, but Skype had different ideas apparently.
Okay. Well, so
Labyrinth is a movie.
Yeah, speaking of children who don't obey their parents,
yeah.
This movie starts with a very young Jennifer Connelly who is like, I don't know, LARPing or practicing for a Ren Fair in the park, and then she
for a minute when I saw her running around in that dress speaking all Shakespearean, I went, oh my god, I really hope she doesn't talk like this for the entire movie. Because I had no conception of what we were getting into here.
Oh, well, that's the best kind of conception with this, because it didn't happen that way. She's just bad at that. And then it's just for some reason there's a like 5-minute chase back to the house, and then it rains, and then she's shouting about, oh no, why did it have to rain? It's like, we can see it's raining, Jennifer.
My favorite part about the rain is that they couldn't afford a ton of rain towers, so it's raining in the foreground close to camera, and they basically just hosed the streets down in the background where she's running, so she's totally not getting rained on.
Yeah, it's like your own personal rain cloud. Yeah. So that's not super effective. And then she gets to the house, and then we are introduced to the person that she is late to meet, who appears to be the stepmother, who altogether really is not that terrible of a person, but Jennifer Connelly does kind of seem to overreact a little to her. And there is an incredibly awkward line where the stepmother says, oh, she treats me like I'm a wicked stepmother in a fairy tale. And it's like, okay. I don't...
5 minutes in the movie and we're already all over the nose.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, so much nose. And then we skip ahead to them leaving for whatever stupid thing they were doing, their dinner date or, you know, role playing or whatever they do, and we're left with
getting out
Jennifer
of the house
Connelly.
To get away from their angry stepdaughter. Well, I
guess
only one of them is a step parent.
Okay,
because that's how. That works.
I know, yes. I was really just going
to
let this
slide.
Allow
me to explain how this works, Joe.
Okay, go ahead. Explain parentage to me.
The politics of adult dating.
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. No, let's not do that.
One parent goes one way, the other. No, so,
yeah, that joke's going to be out of date by the time this episode comes out.
Everything's already out of date. The thing is pretty ridiculous with... her sort of throwing a weird hissy fit in an empty room for like, I don't know, 2 minutes. And it's about Toby, who's not sleeping, the kid, and she resents him so much. And then she starts like going at it with her like story, LARP, cosplay, whatever she's doing thing, Ren Fair practice. I don't know what's happening. And then when she's reading that off and talking about how the Goblin King would take her take away the kid forever, then we start to cut away to Muppets, Goblin Muppets, and
just filling the frame, they're hiding somewhere and listening to what she's saying.
Yeah, just wall to wall, just completely paved in Goblin Muppets, and they have like a weird, like a cabbage patch mouth thing for some of them, so that's also somewhat disquieting. And they are making this commentary about her wishing off screen, where she can't hear it, and it's just like, you know, she's really terrible at this wishing thing. And finally she manages to say the words that summon events to occur, so that it's not just her in a room by herself for the rest of the film. And there's an owl and some spookiness and things running around in the background.
I was confused at one point, like, is she just reciting a play from this book, or where did she get this like magical spell book that also has these incantations that actually do things?
I don't necessarily believe that there is any actual magic in this film, Dan. I think it's pretty clear that she's, I don't know, having some imaginary friend action, delusional dream stuff.
This whole movie would work just as well if, like, at the very end, like, she woke up out of a coma in a hospital bed or something.
Well, she sort of does. Like, she is in the house again, and Toby's safe, and, you know, everything's fine. It's all back to normal. Spoiler alert. Everything's back to normal by the end.
In this movie with Muppets in it, everything is, there's a happy ending, and everything is resolved by the time the movie is over.
Yeah. And then, but there are a lot of Muppets in the end scene, which is a little strange. But the, especially since a couple of those Muppets tried to like take her head off, but, they have some,
by the way, did you know Toby's name is really Toby?
No, I didn't. Anything else.
Did you know he was a sculptor and designer for Weta on Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe, Chronicles of Narnia?
I did not know that. I worked on that movie.
I know. That's why I brought it up. He also did character fabrication for Paranorman.
Well, good for him. So he's over at Leica.
Also, most recently, I Am Not a Serial Killer. I don't know what that is. Maybe that's just something he wanted to have on his IMDb page.
Okay. Sure. Good for Toby.
He's also wearing a top hat in his photo.
Oh, that's nice. I wonder if he keeps in touch with Jennifer.
Why would he keep in touch with Jennifer?
I don't know. Just be like, hey, this is the first movie, and I was in it, and I was Toby, and what's up?
Remember that time you carried me around and made me cry a bunch?
Mm-hmm. Remember that time I was on those creepy MC Escher stairs, and you chased me? Anyway... so the window flies open, owl comes in, and it's a physical owl, not the CG owl that was in the credits at the beginning. And
nice long credit sequence in the beginning there.
Yeah. Oh man, that owl. It was a technically sophisticated thing for the year that the movie came out, especially, you know, feathers, you got to articulate all the movement of that stuff, although they don't really do that. They just sort of like hinge. If you watch it nowadays, you're like, that's so not a bird. It was good for what it was back in the day, kind of like the Genesis effect or Last Starfighter or something. And I'm sure they used like a cray for whatever it was. It's not a stellar effect any longer. The rest of the stuff in this film uses a practical owl who, shows up, flops around a little and leaves frame. And then, David
Bowie.
Who
is often shot in extremely long angles so they can just sort of like intercut it wherever they need to.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff where they just like cut around and they're just like, so, we don't know how to sell this, so we're just going to cut to, like, 50 different things.
It's like an hour and 40-minute long Muppet TV show.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of, like, production style and quality and all that.
Yeah, I mean, well, Henson did it. He co-wrote it with Dennis Lee, and he directed the film. and he produced it, and it was in collaboration with another production company you might be familiar with, Lucasfilm. So
I'm not really familiar with their work. That's not my show 2 weeks ago. I'm given to understand they make movies about space and or stars.
Uh-huh.
Is that accurate?
Sure. I'm going to go to war with you over it. So the Goblin King shows up and he's all like, yeah, so you wished I would take your baby away, so I'm totally doing that right now. And
Never mind goblins. She kind of like goes off in that story, like explaining to the baby that all she has to do is like say a phrase and the Goblin King will take him away. But we don't really understand why there's goblins other than she has a spell book that apparently summons them.
Well, I mean, I don't think it was really a spell book. I think it's just part of the story thing that she was reading.
Then I'm just confused. Like she's angry and at the kid who won't stop crying and telling him a story that may as well be fake. But then all of a sudden things happen. It's there.
Well, yeah, because it's sort of like something fictional happens in reality and it's a surprise.
I was not super surprised.
And then okay, well, I mean he's on the cover art. With that hair. Amazing hair. Talk about your objections to 80s hair.
it goes well with the makeup. He's got kind of a lion look going on. It's very nice.
Yeah. It is so ridiculous. With his wardrobes, they
kind of just like gave up on the bottom half of his outfits because it's just like silly hair, crazy makeup, big goofy jacket thing, and just spandex pants.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, totally. they completely gave up as you go further down, which would be unfortunate for other circumstances in real life. But they have this interaction where he's like, yeah, I'm totally stealing your baby and stuff. And she's like, no, that's not fair. And he's like, well, I don't care. And then he gestures out the window and he's like, if you really want the baby, he'll be in the castle beyond the Goblin City. And then all of a sudden they're in some sort of field next to the labyrinth surrounding the Goblin City. And he's like, you should turn back. And I'm like, well, where would she turn back to? Because she's no longer in her room anymore. But
we've gone too far. I can't turn back now.
Yeah, well... Well, that's what you said when you were 20 minutes in and you were complaining about the film. And I was like, we could do something else.
No, that was more of a time constraint than anything. But mm-hmm. It's peculiar on a number of levels. Like this is where we reach like the first like moral of the story, which is of course kids complaining about things being fair, and you gotta learn that life's not necessarily fair. Yeah. So
it'll only take her like another hour and 30 minutes to figure that one out.
Sure, sure. Well, she stopped saying it's not fair, and then yells at what's his name, Hoggle, for saying it isn't fair. So she kind of learns it a little bit earlier, or she gets the inkling. But don't be a jerk, kid. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is really a message movie about being a nice, I don't know, person. So then the Goblin King's like, okay, I'm setting this timer too, because I don't know why he needs to do that, but he does. And then he fades away, and she's left
there. It's a 13-hour clock for more surrealism.
Yes. Well,
Because that's what this needs, is just more surrealism.
It has it in spades. And she goes down to the outside of the maze, and she's very frustrated by it, and she stomps around for a while, and she comes across Hoggle, who is a... small person with a animatronic head and oversized glove hand things. It must be extremely uncomfortable and suffocating to wear that. But that's what it is. And Hoggle is using his little old fashioned pesticide sprayer from like the 1950s in made up fairyland to spray fairies and have them drop to the ground dead, and counting them off as he does it.
He got 60, I think.
Yeah. And she picks up one and gets bitten, and she's very disappointed by this interaction with her very first fairy. And So, you know, he gets her into the maze and is like, you know, a jerk. And she's like, okay, well, I can do whatever. I'm fine. And then he disappears. And then she's like, oh, maybe I can't do whatever. And she's like, you know, I can just run, like, you know, I'm just taking it for granted that it's all here. And I don't know what that was about. And then she starts running for a while.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. She runs for a while. And then, she gives up and sits down and comes across a little worm caterpillar thing, that is blue and is a small puppet, that is miniaturized a little further, optically. And, so it's all like, hey, what's up? You come inside for tea. And it doesn't make any sense because she's not worm sized. He gives her some advice on where to look, and there's the little trick of apparently she's been running past Trompe-l'oeil walls this whole time, and she walks over and realizes that there's actually a separation between the rock wall, and before she goes away, he's like, yeah, no, don't go that way. Whatever you do, never go that way. And she's like, oh, okay, thank you. And she goes off the other way. Cut to the little worm thing saying, it's a good thing she didn't go that way, otherwise she'd go right to the goblin castle. So nice.
Yeah, that's, I thought the wall was a nice optical illusion. That was pretty well done, comparatively for, like, the rest of the stuff in here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't make any sense how she would have run past it, of course. So.
No, because that's not really how parallax works, but, no. You know, when you have cameras, I guess it's fine.
Yeah, well, and she comes across the things turning tiles and the doors.
Drawing little arrows with her lipstick on the ground so she knows how to get back out. But they keep flipping them over and changing them around, and she gets so frustrated and confused.
Yeah, and then she turns around, and then there's the two doors which have these shield things, and then people on top and bottom, which must be so uncomfortable for all eternity. But that's what they are, and then we get the whole, like, one of us tells only the truth and one of us tells only lies thing. And
I was literally just thinking about this goofy paradox question earlier today. It's a very, very odd timing.
What a quinky dink. Did you pick the wrong door too?
I think I got distracted by the turkey smoke fumes, so I didn't I didn't continue trying to figure it out.
Okay. So she picks the wrong door and goes through and falls down, and there's helping hands.
A bunch of gray hands sticking out of the wall that catch her from falling. I did like how the hands sort of like turned into like little faces and were talking to her. That was kind of nice.
Yeah, but it is kind of like avant-garde theater for a little stretch here. And then she is deposited elsewhere. And is this where
she says, I'm already going down, so I guess I'll keep going down. And they're like, all right, fine, drop. Too late to change your mind now.
And what was the is this when we cut away to David Bowie's first dance number, or is that later?
I think that might be now, because she like ends up in the dark hole or whatever, right?
I think so, the oubliette.
Yeah
And so the goblin's like, oh yeah, she wound up in the oubliette, that's good news. And then Dave Bowie's like, no, this is terrible news, she got way too far. And it's like, okay, whatever. And then David Bowie's like, you know, remember the babe with the power. And then we go into the song, and then we get to Dance Magic Dance, which is, you know, a classic, really. I'm sure it's one of your favorite David Bowie songs.
Totally. It's right up there with the rest of his songs.
Oh, there are better ones. But with the Dance Magic Dance thing, you know, I was thinking you could probably shorten that a little. We could rebrand it for the show.
Are you suggesting that we perform that?
No, I'm saying it could be Dan Magic Dan, you know? Then you'd have your own little experience, you know? Because you love this movie so much. It could be your take on it.
Would I get to wear the spandex?
I don't think the world needs that. But if you want to, that's fine.
You know, the world doesn't always know what it needs or and or wants. So it's up to taste fluencers to give it to them.
Okay.
Go ahead. In the form of song and spandex.
Taste fluence the world with your tight pants. And so the song and dance number here is real complicated with Muppets and things happening. And it goes on for a while. And then, of course, Hoggle.
I did enjoy how he kind of like tossed Toby to the side at one point, and one of the Muppets caught him. It was a nice, like, right on a cutaway. It was like, oh, he's throwing a puppet baby now, and then cut back to it's the real kid again. They didn't actually throw a child.
No, movie magic, Dan.
movie magic in the form of a cut.
Yes. Well, I mean, editing is the first kind of special effect. Really, when you think about it. And so they...
Yeah, I took that class. History of film and all that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Mm-hmm. Somebody disappeared. And you cut. They were there, and now they're not there. Where'd they go?
Magic. Dan. Magic Dan. So then Hoggle gets her out of the oubliette, and the Goblin King appears, and is all like... Oh, wait, no. First, they walk past all the little robot faces, animatronic faces... that are all like, turn back, and then says no, and then there's a kind of a funny one where it's like, oh, please, this is all I ever want to do, and says to turn back. So, you know, it's not like it's a completely terrible film, it's just, it has like a couple little awkward funny moments, and then like most of it's unintentionally funny, and that was kind of the reason why I selected it, is the unintentional stuff, but there are a couple things where they actually meant something to be funny, and it was like, okay, that's worth a chuckle. And then they come across the little glass orb thing, and it pops up into the tip jar of some vagabond. And then, it turns out it's Bowie. And there is this strange light that comes on, like a rim light on the side of his body from the doorway they just walked out of. And it is quite hilarious because he's standing there in his spandex pants, and You see a lot of stuff in profile in stark relief with that rim light, and I was just like, why did you guys do that? That was weird. And so they have their little conversation. He's like, oh, I was totally taking her the wrong way. It was my diabolical plan all along. And he's like, I'll see that you do that. And it was like, okay, oh, dear.
He's like, hey, why are you wearing that bracelet that she gave you to help her to get to the castle? He's like, no, it's just, I've had this all along. No, don't worry about that. Pay no attention to the bracelet on my arm.
I don't know why he didn't just say, like, it's part of our fake friendship thing. Like, it would have been way more plausible than, no, I don't love her. But
why didn't either of them go, like, she's standing literally right there? Why don't we have this conversation somewhere else?
I don't know. it's not that kind of a movie. I'm getting lost in this movie. Where's the next thing that they go off to?
Well, Bowie disappears, and then there's like the drill thing that comes down the tunnel to kill them.
He throws the glass orb, and then it's the cleaners.
Right.
And there's this giant spiral drill thing. It looks incredibly menacing, and it fills the entire tunnel. And they barely get out of the way. And then as you see it pass, it's just like a little rinky-dink, like, bicycle-powered thing.
Yeah, it's like two people on the back, like, pulling levers to make it go.
Yeah, it's sort of funny when it passes. And they get out of there, and then he's all like, oh, well, I was totally, like, lying about helping, not helping with the thing. And then she's like, I don't know if I can trust you. And it's like, fine, be that way.
he says, yeah, you really don't have any options, I guess you're going to trust me.
And then they go up out of some terracotta pot somewhere, and they made a big deal about the fact that the terracotta pot wasn't on the ground, like it was on a little stand above the ground, and it was like, that would be impressive if you did some other things to the camera angle to like reveal an angle down through the thing, but that didn't happen, so it just really does look like you cut away to them being inside of a terracotta pot, and then it opened. And so they get out of that, and he's like, oh, well, I'm off to do my own thing. Screw you, and she steals his jewels, and it's like, no, it's my stuff, that's not fair. And then she does that horrible thing where she diminutively puts her hand on his head, and it's just like, you're just a big bully, Jennifer Connelly. And they he splits and heads out of there, and she wanders off and comes across a Ludo, who is a I don't know,
kind of like a monster orangutan or something.
Yeah, but also with like some sort of like very simple vocabulary, and seems to be somewhat dim, but can make moaning noises that cause rocks to come forward.
He can only say, "I am Ludo."
I was thinking the same thing, but you know, I don't think it predated that. So they have the he's like, yeah, Ludo, and they wander off after they defeat the couple incompetent goblins with the little bitey things on sticks.
She just throws rocks at them from afar and like knocks their helmets around until they get like confused and start banging into each other and then run away.
It's a really sophisticated battle method.
Yeah, she throws like three rocks and then they all just run away.
Yeah, and it's so stupid. They make it off out of there, and they go into like this like forest thing. She's like, "Don't worry, Ludo, everything's fine." And then he gets sucked into the earth, and then she's by herself, and she comes across your favorite characters in the entire film.
Is this the ones that have removable heads?
Yep, the orange rod puppets. Are on kind loose grade, so you can't see the rod puppeteers.
They're kind of bird things without wings, and orange, and you know, bright orange, because that, you know, not exactly the opposite of blue or anything. Because yeah, they're dancing around on blue screen, and it's very bad, very 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 bad blue screen, and
incredibly bad,
very very bad optical printing. Like in the wide, you can tell since there are so many layers, like just the registration on the film is so far off that not only is it a bad blue screen, but they all have like black halos around the characters too, because it's just so many layers in the optical printer. It's just like torn through the sprocket holes on all the film.
It's an unattractive look. and the whole like the background, like even Jennifer Connelly, nothing's real. It's all just like smushed together. And that sequence goes on for far too long with the singing number and the tossing heads. And you know, I'm sure that would have been novel to a small child who was probably the target audience of this film, but I did not find it novel. I've never found it novel. I always thought it was weird, even when I saw it when I was a kid. And so they go out of this.
She distracts them just by like grabbing their heads, just like throwing them off to the side and then running away.
Well, first they try to detach her head, which is an important plot point later for when they go into her bedroom at the end, and you're just like, that thing tried to take your head off, so it's here.
Oh, she explained that her head is not removable.
Yeah, and then they didn't believe her, and we're going to take it off anyways, and so then she yanked off all their heads, threw them, and ran. And Hoggle decides he's going to come to her rescue, because he hears her calling for help for some time, pulls her up to safety, and then she's so grateful that she kisses him. But Jareth, the Goblin King, was like, yeah, don't do that, because I will send you to the Bog of Eternal Stench. And so they immediately get sucked out a trapdoor to the Bog of Eternal Stench. But fortunately, they hold onto the ledge. And they sort of make it off to the side and then fall down, and they find Ludo, and they're all like, oh yay, this is going great. And then we meet the most annoying, horrible thing in the entire film.
The little fox thing.
Yeah, Sir Didymus.
He's he rides around on a sheepdog.
Yeah, Ambrosius.
Yeah, my neighbor's had a sheepdog just like that.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Barker.
I hope he didn't ride the sheepdog. That would
No.
It's not appropriate.
I was too large and he was too unruly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His name was Barkley because of the sports ball player.
Ah.
Sir Charles. He was in Phoenix back then.
Jason follows a French bulldog on Instagram called Sir Charles Barkley.
I like how you try to relay your personal life experiences to mine by making that leap. That is the best.
I mean, I don't care enough to follow, but I just know that name because I've seen several photos of this dog.
Sure, sure.
It's a cute dog. No disputing that.
There's the world-renowned basketball player, and then there's a French bulldog on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. So, does any sort of Muppet Fox type character ride the French bulldog?
No. That wouldn't be appropriate for Instagram. And they have their little scene here, and it's delightful. Because Sir Didymus is just a pain in the butt and won't let them pass and says that there's no actual smell here, that everything's fine. And then he almost...
You shall not pass. That's it's from that other one.
Yeah, yeah. The one with the jewelry. And so...
Chloe swords.
They have... you're so weirdly anti fun stuff. I don't understand you.
Those movies are not fun.
They're fun. I mean, I haven't watched any of the Hobbit films. I'm sure those are absolute train wrecks going off of what everyone else has said. And the whole like last third of Return of the King is unwatchable. It is, ugh, Jesus. But anyway,
but the rest is super fun, right?
No, well, not super fun, but it's just nice to have some resolution to it. And there are good moments peppered throughout, but it is overly too long. But this isn't really a movie about that, because this is when she goes over a little rope bridge over the Bog of Eternal Stench, and then the dog's like, it's super safe, and then like rattles the whole thing and it falls apart. And then Ludo calls for rocks, a boulder comes down and lands underneath her, and then other ones just float up to the surface. It's a good thing they're all made out of foam. And then she makes it off to the side. They all get across. They go wandering through the city to go on their merry little way. And they come across more fun, entertaining things and breaking into the Goblin Kingdom. Blah 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 blah. Just skip through to the end because this part's really boring. And there's a big battle, and the gate thing closes, and the thing jumps off of it and stuff. And then there's the thing in the throne room, and then they're like, oh, it must be this way. And so then they go through the M.C. Escher thing, and then David Bowie's like, yeah, I'm just going to sing some more. And then we get like another like Bonnie Tyler music video, only with David Bowie. And
it's very much a music video where he's just sort of like hiding in the shadows in the foreground where you see Jennifer Connelly running around in the background trying to figure out the Escher stairs.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting in how they sort of played it. Like, you'd see the back of somebody on one side and they'd be on the other side already because they were walking through the thing. You know, sort of like Portal. And
yeah, did you see that GIF I sent you on the Twitter?
No.
It was the one where he comes from the bottom of the little thing and flips around the edge to the top, and he looks like he's being carried by some sort of robotic arm.
Uh-huh.
So it's a good one. I've seen that on the internet before I saw this movie, and now I know what it's from.
Oh, well,
context.
If there's only one thing this movie could do, it's provide context for one GIF you've seen before.
Well, you know, for a GIF.
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 Peanut butter. Escher.
Peter Pan. Peanut butter. Skippy.
So basically she can't find her way through the stairs. She sees Toby down there kind of sitting against like a big hole, like he may fall down, and she takes a giant leap of faith and jumps from the stairs all the way down to where Toby is. Although she doesn't land where Toby is, she just kind of drifts for like, you know, 10 stories and then delicately lands on the ground next to David Bowie in a different outfit now, I think. And then they have their final little conversation.
Yeah, I think this is his white owl outfit, it's all like, oh, I don't remember all of the rest of this thing I'm supposed to say from the novel or whatever she's been referencing off and on, and she's like, oh, this'll get rid of you, and
I always forget that one line, the important one.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, you have no power over me, and it's not delivered in a super effective manner. Jennifer Connelly does not do a brilliant job with that. And then the little glass ball thing, and then everything's all fine. And they make it out of there.
They're whisked back to their house. Toby is asleep in bed, yawning, kind of, because he just woke up. And Jennifer Connelly has learned a lesson, so she gives the teddy bear back to her brother. And she goes back to her room to hang out and looks in the mirror to see all of her Muppet friends who aren't actually behind her. And she's kind of sad and says, you know, I want you in my life, or I need you guys or something. And then suddenly it's a Muppet party in the bedroom.
Wow, that sounds illegal.
It's just dancing. And David Bowie is in owl form leering at them through the window.
Dance, magic dance. And so they, would you say it's a Requiem for a Dream?
I would not say that at all. Can we please not talk about that movie?
Would you say that she's the heroine of this film?
Oh my God. I don't want to talk about Requiem for a Dream.
Okay.
See, now I can already hear the score from Requiem for a Dream in my head, and it's making me sad.
Okay. Well, you just gotta remember to dance magic dance, and then you'll be fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Actually,
Dan,
when I see Bowie's
Magic Dan, remember that's our branded version.
Yeah. When I see Bowie's face here on the poster, I just picture him from Zoolander now.
Mm. I picture him from. Did you ever watch the Venture Brothers?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever see Showdown at Cremation Creek parts 1 and 2?
I wouldn't say I would know the title of them. So what happens in them?
David Bowie shows up, but it's not really David Bowie. It's James Urbanek doing the voice of David Bowie.
I don't know that I saw that one.
Oh, it's so good. It's the best episode of the whole freaking series. And then it kind of goes downhill in the following season. But
Venture Brothers is great.
You need to watch Showdown at Cremation Creek after this podcast is over. It is, okay. It is brilliant.
We'll put that in the notes.
Mm-hmm. And I bring that up because there's some references that they draw from Labyrinth. But anyway, so this film, we talked about it and it's over now.
Yeah, that's basically how I got it. Like, I was kind of a little distracted and kind of half asleep for a part of the movie. But then I went back and I read the, it's like, three relatively substantial paragraphs on Wikipedia describing the plot, and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I took away from it. So I didn't miss anything. That's just what happens. And that's pretty much all there is to it. It's a movie with Muppets and David Bowie, and I guess it's for kids and stuff, and teaches you how to not be such a selfish little person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
Yeah. And also, you should be nice to people.
You should be nice to people. Everyone needs friends, even if they're little troll-looking people.
Mm-hmm. And when a strange Muppet with garbage on her back abducts you to your bedroom and then tries to convince you to stay there, maybe don't do that.
Maybe don't... cling to all of your worldly possessions and lose focus of the fact that you're there to rescue your stepbrother.
Yeah, and don't eat a magic peach that makes you go to a ballroom dance. Drugs are bad, okay?
We did kind of gloss over the magic peach, didn't we?
I didn't really even think it merited any other conversation other than, wow, this is weird.
Yeah, David Bowie drugs her with a magic peach full of LSD. And then she goes to a dance, and they dance.
Yeah, and then she's trapped in a crystal like Zardoz.
I didn't see that one.
Oh, it's not even worth it. Don't ever.
I didn't think that it was. Mm-hmm. Don't they use similar crystal ball type thingies in the Neverending Story?
I think you're thinking of the Neverending Story Part 2, where I think they put memories inside of, like,
That is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, the Orin thing is, the evil sorceress lady who's the nothing or whatever? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. The existential threat, given form, she uses a device to put all of his memories into little glass baubles, and then that's part of her evil plan to like deprive him of his humanity or something.
Yeah, he's like trading the memories for something else, and then just losing who he was.
Well, every time he makes a wish, then it does it.
That's what it was. Man, I haven't seen that movie since I was like 8 or something.
Speaking of things that do not hold up at all, definitely that. Oy.
Hmm. So, how often do you watch Labyrinth?
I hadn't seen it, I think, in its entirety in 15 years. I've seen bits of it, like in YouTube videos and GIFs and stuff, since then. And I was thinking, you know, it would be fun, because, you know, David Bowie, and it would be light.
Who doesn't love David Bowie and big poofy lion hair and odd makeup?
Yeah, and that kind of backfired on me. Because then I had to watch it too, and it turns out I'm not as fond of it, even in its unintentional humor, as I thought I was going into this. I seem to have better memories about the cheesiness of it than I do after having seen this now.
This movie cost $8 million more than Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And made less. Wow, that's
But it's one of those ones that always gets brought up as one of those cult classic things. But yeah, Jim Henson is not very good at making money, ever.
I have heard a lot of people talk about this movie, but I've never really understood the context. You can't really tell if people love it, hate it, just, you know, enjoy referencing it or something. But I can't say aside from the fact that Aline on Twitter just moments before we started this said that she loved the movie. I don't know a lot of people that actually claim to love Labyrinth. It's just a thing that exists, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this is also a follow-up to the, I guess you could say, more serious Dark Crystal.
Oh, God, that's the other thing, too.
Yeah. That is also there. But you know, there's 4 years between them. Although they have some similarities, but yeah, I mean, it's basically just like Fraggle Rock.
I liked Fraggle Rock. I watched Fraggle Rock.
Yeah,
the little green guys that build the little clear skyscrapers or whatever underground.
I don't know. They were clear. I thought they would just like made things, just like, and had zany plots, and then they would go up to the garbage heap. And then there was a monster thing that would flap its whole mouth open and closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They had like little sticks that they would build, like sort of the shell of buildings out of, and they were like clear plastic.
Oh. Okay.
I think.
All right. does anyone know how many drugs Jim Henson ever did? Like, was it LSD? Was it like marijuana?
Is that a known thing, Jim Henson drugs?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, you know, you watch something like this and you're like, there's got to be something. You know, that era, there's got to be a little expansion of the consciousness.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Let's see what Yahoo Answers says to, did Jim Henson, creator of the Muppets, do any drugs? And if so, which ones?
Oh, good. Yahoo Answers.
First off, no offense, but this is a totally ridiculous question. No, to my knowledge, Jim Henson never smoked. Answer. That's almost a reasonable thing to say.
It is. I mean, it's not easy smoking green or something. So, are you choking from your smoke inhalation, Dan?
I am. I have been smoked today. I have been smoked in hickory.
Uh-huh. Is that what the kids are calling it these days on the streets?
Mm-hmm. Smoking the hickory?
Yep.
It's good. I'm a fan of hickory for like barbecue type things like beef or pulled pork or whatever. I'm not entirely sure hickory is the most applicable to turkey or perhaps chicken, but it worked out pretty well. I mean, you know, it did what I told it to do. It smoked it with hickory, but I'm not sure it's quite the right flavor profile.
You told it? Like you had a conversation?
I had a conversation with the turkey and I said, look here, turkey, we're going to put some hickory smoke all around you, and you're going to taste like hickory.
Did you threaten it?
Did I threaten it?
Yeah, you say, don't run afoul of my rules.
No,
I'm just trying to you know, fill time here. I mean, really, I don't have anything else to say about the film. So yeah, let's make puns about your turkey.
Have you ever smoked any meats?
No. Although one of my good friends' families would deep fry turkeys.
Oh God, those are dangerous.
I never did that. Although I did see it in operation being done, and it does seem dangerous because it's like, wow, it's a lot of oil over that fire. So good luck. They never had a problem, to my knowledge, and they do it every year.
I think the turkey deep fryers are actually one of the leading causes of like third degree burns on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like I said, I have no intention of ever doing that. But the turkey does taste delicious when it comes out of that.
Mm-hmm. I used to sell turkey deep fryers when I worked at the old Sports Authority a long time ago.
I did not know you worked at a Sports Authority. Tell me more.
It was probably like only like 2 months, but in my brain it was longer. It was like a summer job or something. I think college, maybe high school. I honestly don't remember. I was very bad at my job. I was in the team sports section selling basketballs and footballs and soccer balls and all that stuff. But I would always just wander to the other side of the store and talk to my friend who sold all the hunting stuff, you know, the bows and the shotguns and what have you. And then
I got a question. What sport is frying again? Is that an Olympic event?
It is actually. They place those in every section. When it is Thanksgiving time, they set up like a little pyramid of turkey deep fryers in basically every aisle that you kind of trip over, going like, "Oh, look at this turkey deep fryer! You better get one of those. It's on sale. It's only like $40 or whatever."
Yeah, they call those end caps.
Yeah, I also I almost dropped a treadmill on a person one time because they don't really train you how to do things when you work there. They just give you the key to the forklift and say, go get that 500-pound treadmill off that 30-foot platform up there, because they store them up on top of the shelves there. So, there's that.
Okay. If there was anyone that I would want to put my life in the hands of, it's not you, but I'm glad some random customer was like, okay, I have faith in him. And the store I have faith in him too.
There's not much to be done about it. It's my department. I also sold like the treadmills, and people would always ask me like, what's the difference between this one and that one? And, why do I want, you know, 2.5 horsepower instead of 1.5? And I honestly had no idea. So I just made up some shit.
Oh, so you were the Best Buy employee of the Sports Authority.
I mean, like, where was I going to get this information? I honestly had no idea. There wasn't like a training manual on various treadmills. They just had like 6 different treadmills back there with different features. Some of them had like little fans on them. Some of them had CD players. And it's just, that's pretty much it.
That's great, Dan. I can see why you excelled at the job and remember it so fondly.
I sold some rollerblades a couple times. I sold one to this nice old couple. They were like in their 60s and decided they wanted a rollerblade.
Mm-hmm.
We sold I sold golf clubs as part of my department. Bowling balls was also mine.
Okay.
That's about it.
Did you ever set up all the turkey deep fryers into a pyramid and then
throw a bowling ball through it?
Bowling ball, yeah.
No. I was more of a fan of just like shooting basketball into the basketball hoops, but that was like right around the time where they started putting those like clear plastic things over top of the basketball hoop so you couldn't test them out, which was super bummer.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, what am I gonna do? I'm just gonna like walk around. You can't like play with any of the stuff.
Okay.
Except me and this one guy, Scott, we used to like throw a football around in the back there sometimes.
Okay.
That's pretty much the extent of my experience at Sports Authority.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did we end?
Yes, you asked. I mean, that's now you're just there are people saying random words in the chat room, and I have no idea what's going on.
Oh, they want to know my retail background. But we've been over that.
Oh, right, as, right. You're
as Boy Named Boom correctly points out, I worked at a supermarket at one point.
Right.
Very, very similar to your sports authority in most respects.
Did you ever stack up any cans in the middle of an aisle and roll something down in a bowling ball style fashion?
No, because I was a goody two shoes. So I didn't do anything.
What does a goody two shoes in the context of a grocery store look like?
It just means that I took my breaks at appropriate times, clocked in and clocked out. I did what I was asked to do. I didn't mess around. I didn't like take, because you could take the go backs, all the things that people don't want or change their minds on or just leave up by the registers. You could take those back to the shelves. And so people would try to do that, and then they would just like disappear for a couple hours, just wandering around back there. So it was a desirable thing to do, but I didn't like to do that because I thought that was boring, because I didn't dilly-dally back there when I did it. So, you know, that's the kind of goody two-shoes I am.
Just there to do the work.
Yep. And I worked in the customer... I worked my way up from bagger to cashier to customer service. So if you can just imagine me as a helpful customer service agent, so...
When you graduated to customer service, did you get to wear a vest?
Oh, no. You always wore this black apron. It was extremely
unflattering. Like you're behind
unflattering.
A deli counter?
Yeah, except you weren't. You were never behind a deli counter because you didn't work a deli. But the cashiers had to wear it, and the baggers had to wear it. And customer service, if you were actually permanent customer service, like they could wear just like a white shirt and black slacks. So it was slightly different.
Hmm. I think now that we've covered both of our retail sales experiences, we can wrap this show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's
run out the clock on this treadmill.
You could run out the clock on a treadmill if you danced on it.
We also sold those, like, you remember the gazelle thing that Tony Little guy used to sell in infomercials?
Yeah. Oh,
with
yeah.
The big long ponytail? Mm-hmm. That was fun to test out for people.
My sister had one of those.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, there wasn't really enough room to operate that safely. Because it would swing so far. I got on it a couple times just to like see like how it worked, like balance wise. But you always felt like if you just leaned a little to the side, the whole thing would like fall apart.
Yeah.
It was not like a good thing.
The only other treadmilly, other goofy gizmo, I guess we sold the Bowflex, which everyone would try out and then just appear very confused by, and then just like not buy them. And then there was also a treadmill that was just kind of like momentum powered. It was just this little tiny thing that just did not have any electricity to it. It was just supposed to be smooth enough that you could just perpetually run on it. It was just terrible. Nobody ever bought one of those either.
Charming.
We also had one of those like pink rubber guys with no arms that you could like just punch. That was fun.
Oh, you mean like the punching bags, but they were people, and then they would kind of like topple over like one of those clown things?
They weren't supposed to topple over, but yes.
Well,
it's just
but they would lean to the side, not like topple over.
Yeah, a little bit. He had some flex to his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. It's a good way to take out your retail stress.
Okay.
Did you have anything at the grocery store that you would punch when you would get frustrated?
No.
Hmm.